I solved a big snack problem in our household in a very simple way. My children love eating berries, and so do I, for not just the taste, but the vitamins and nutrients, fiber, all the good stuff we want on a regular basis. The problem? We all know what it's like to pick up a berry we just bought, and it's already growing fuzz in the fridge. So I've switched to buying frozen berries. And a favorite I look for now is Washington Red Raspberries. Did you know 90% of frozen red raspberries in the United States are grown in Washington State and mostly grown on family farms who harvest them during peak ripeness and clean and freeze on location, sealing in all that freshness, taste, and great nutritional value. So now I use frozen raspberries in our yogurt or smoothies as a sweet treat. And I love that this means I can support local American farmers and have a healthy snack for my family that withstands the test of time. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at your local grocery store or Costco. And how do you know you're getting the good stuff? Well, you just take a peek at the packaging and look for product of the U.S., and then you'll know you're on the right path. Oh, and if you want some fun recipes and more information, go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. And you're going to find recipes, health tips, retail locations, everything you need to make frozen Washington red raspberries a regular part of your routine. Overall, it's just a smarter choice. Hey guys, we recorded the following conversation right before President Trump came out with an unexpected announcement that he was pausing some tariffs that were going into effect or had gone into effect Wednesday morning. We still have some other tariffs that are still in place, and this is still very much a developing situation. It's very fluid, if you will. I was looking for a way to add some reporting on how tariffs can impact our life in a very practical way. And we have an amazing guest on this topic that despite some of these changes, these breaking news headlines, the information that he shared is still very much relevant. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to the supermarket guru, Phil Lempert. Today, we're joined by Phil Lempert. He is the supermarket guru or founder of Supermarket Guru or the supermarket guru. Maybe a little bit of all of that, Phil. How does one become a supermarket guru?
Well, my grandfather's a dairy farmer. My father is a food manufacturer. And the first time I was on World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, he interviewed me and then he said, "Oh, you're a supermarket guru." And he's the one who came up with it. And I then the next day called our lawyer and said, "Can we trademark this, you think?" So that was the beginning of Supermarket Guru.
That's a great story. Yeah. I had no idea. You are the guru. Are you the supermarket shopper in your household, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, besides doing the regular supermarket shopping, I visit anywhere between 6 and 10 supermarkets every week just to be able to walk up and down the aisles to see what's going on, what consumers are buying. Being born in the food industry, I had a choice. I could either, be a food manufacturer or I could help consumers really understand. So, I always talk about myself being in the center of a triangle. And each point of the triangle, one is consumers, one are manufacturers, the other ones are retailers. My job is to really understand what all three are doing, what all three want, and then communicate the other two to the other one.
Oh, that is really fascinating. And that makes me feel even more excited about talking to you today, because as I was preparing for this segment, talking about tariffs and the price of imports and imported food and all the things, I realized I don't actually know how a grocery store works. I think about a grocery store like a local farmer's market, but it is different. It's a totally different business. I see you smiling, So let me just start with a really basic question.
Sure.
How many items do we find typically in a regular grocery store?
Between 40 and 42,000.
How many of those items do you think will be impacted by tariffs?
I would say about half. And when we talk about the tariffs, we have to understand that even things like spices and garlic are affected. So it could be one or two ingredients in prepared foods or in a frozen food or in a baked good that really affects everything. So I would suggest probably half.
What do you think is going to be the most affected?
Fresh foods, certainly. If we look at produce, and again, because of our trade agreement with Mexico and Canada, there is no tariff on produce going back. But we get so much produce from Latin America and South America. So we're going to see that. Certainly seafood. If we look at the tariff on Vietnam, you know, 46%, and probably rising, we get most of our shrimp. From Vietnam and from Thailand. So we're going to see on fresh foods, on seafoods. That's probably going to be the first that we're going to see. But it's going to, you know, go through the supply chain. We get 60% of our apple juice that we consume in the U.S. from China. Now there's 104% tariff on goods from China. So that means, you know, the price of apple juice is going to double. And the problem that, in my opinion, that the administration has is they really don't understand the global food system. So you can say, let's grow our apples here. Well, an apple tree takes, you know, well over a decade to bear fruit. So if we start planting apple trees today, maybe we'll have apples 10, 12, 15 years from now. Also, if you look at garlic, 80% of all the garlic that's produced globally comes from China. We look at coffee. Coffee is coming from Brazil or Colombia, and they've had major problems there because of weather situations, because of flooding, and, you know, now tariffs on top of that. We look at chocolate. Cocoa comes from Africa. And again, major problems there even before the tariffs. So we've got to look at the tariffs, we've got to look at climate change. We also have to look at farm labor. So I'm in California, and here in California, we have a lot of agriculture. And frankly, we don't have any farm laborers because they're afraid to go to work because of being deported, the risk of being deported. So now what we have is we have crops that are just rotting in the fields.
Wow, I didn't know any of that. And you really do put those things together of how this is a very multifaceted system that probably very few of us understand. Can you go back to the point that you made about Mexico, about the tariffs impacting or not impacting produce from there? Because I didn't know too much about that. And I'm sure our audience would like to hear more about that too.
Sure. So under the original NAFTA and then the other deal that Trump made, there are certain products that are not affected. For example, avocados. You know, people are freaking out about avocados, saying we should grow them here. Well, avocados are not part of the tariff. However, you know, the number one beer here in the U.S. is Modelo Especial. That's the number one beer. Guess what? That has a tariff on it. Tequila comes from Mexico. That has a tariff on it. Berries. We have so many of our berries, blackberries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries coming from Mexico. They will be affected by the tariff.
Berries, coffee, apple juice, tequila. I mean, you're hitting a lot of the major things that cross one's path throughout the course of the week, Phil.
Yeah. And even if you look at bananas, you know, our favorite fruit is bananas. Well, bananas come from Ecuador, Guatemala, Costa Rica. They're going to be affected by, again, the tariffs. And again, they're perishable. So when we look at perishable products, we can't stock up. I mean, I can go stock up on tequila and, you know, beat the price increases. But, you know,
would you suggest that, by the way, Phil? Like, is that something that was going to be my final question to you about stocking up on things? But I should just add, I mean, is that something that you think consumers should do? Should we stock up on some things that we like?
Yes, anything that's not perishable. And if, for example, meat, could we get about 40% of our meat from Canada? That's going to be affected by the tariff. If you are going to stock up on meat and you've got an extra freezer space, do it, but make sure you wrap it in foil, then put it in a freezer Ziploc bag, and then date it, because meat, you know, can stay in a freezer not indefinitely, up to about 6 months. After that, both from a myosin standpoint and a texture standpoint, it changes.
For those of you listening on podcasts, when Phil just said that, my mouth dropped because I thought 6 months, I got to go check my freezer right now. I think the pandemic has probably led to a lot of families keeping things longer than we thought or buying extra because you just kind of are worried about that. What do you think the timeline is, Phil, between the tariffs going into place, which we see going into place this week, and prices actually going up or supplies actually being impacted?
Immediately. For a couple reasons. Number one, again, fresh foods are going to, you know, move the fastest, and, you know, seafood is going to move the fastest. Also, and I hate to say this, but there's some opportunistic people out there. The report just came out the other day about Cal-Maine, who's the largest egg producer. Well, guess what? Their earnings were just reported the other day. It's been the most profitable period in that company's history, with prices going up. So we've got to be smart. You know, hopefully we're not going to see these companies be opportunistic. But again, they can't absorb. The average supermarket makes between 1.5% and 2.5% net profit. That's it. So they can't absorb it. Certain food companies could. You look at some of the soda companies, you know, they can absorb. Again, the price of aluminum is going up for them. So anything that comes in a can, beer, soda, kombucha, I mean, all that is going to be affected. So, you know, Coke and Pepsi, they could probably absorb a little bit because they've got a low product cost. But some of those other products can't. And if you remember a few years ago, one of the big problems that we had was companies doing shrinkflation, you know, putting less in the package itself. Well, I'm fearful that that's going to happen again.
And so the price stays the same, but you're not getting as much, but you may not realize it because it might be in a box or something like that, and you're getting a smaller portion. We've all probably seen that film. You open up the box and it's less than half is filled, and it's very shocking. So for a grocery store chain, are they dealing with major like clearinghouses of imports? Are they dealing directly with the seller abroad? How does the system work?
It really depends on the chain. So if you've got the Krogers of the world, you've got the ShopRites of the world, you know, those companies, they do have people who import directly. Smaller stores don't have that. And when I'm talking about smaller stores, I'm talking about chains that have 50 or 60 stores or less. So it really depends. And it depends on, you know, what's going on the other side of the pond. Some go through distributors, some go through exporters. So for every category, it's different.
Okay, that's good to know, to understand that also depending on where we shop could impact our experience. While you were talking, I was thinking about Walmart. Walmart is one of the biggest providers, is my understanding, of supermarket goods in the country. Is someone like Walmart going to be more powerful in this sort of environment because they have more leverage to think about their pricing? You know, is this a way for the bigger chains to get bigger and the smaller chains to further struggle?
Well, Walmart is the number one grocery, you know, supplier. So yes, they've got more power, more purchasing power, which is why, you know, survey after survey, their prices are the cheapest. Is this going to hurt smaller grocers, the IGAs of the world and so on? Probably. Because again, keep in mind, this is no surprise. We've been hearing this for 6 months about these tariffs. So a lot of the larger chains and a lot of the larger importers have been working on this for months, whether it was renegotiating, whether it's bringing in more inventory than normally they have, making better deals, or even changing sources of supply. In certain cases, you can change your source of supply to a country that has lower tariffs. But where this is a moving target for everybody right now to try to figure out what's going to happen next.
Do you expect any shortages?
Yes.
Reminiscent of the pandemic? Is there anything like that where you could see an empty shelf somewhere?
Absolutely. And not for the same reason that the supply chain is broken, but we're going to see countries who are not going to ship to the U.S. You know, we get a lot of our wood pulp from Canada. So wood pulp is toilet paper and paper towels. So if, in fact, Canada stops sending us wood pulp, more
you're bringing toilet paper shortages. You're bringing me back to a tough time when we had different toilet paper rolls hidden around the house just in case, you know, it's something.
Yep.
I hate to admit it, but there was a time when obviously in a lot of households, there was a question about that. So this is really important. So you're expecting to see the impact of these tariffs on prices, also supplies and availability. As I was looking through researching some of what you've written and talked about in the last several days, one of the things you mentioned, two items that I thought was interesting. You mentioned that alcohol imported alcohol could get clobbered. That was a direct quote. So I was curious about the use of that word clobbered and what do you mean by that? And also about olive oil, which is something where we've seen prices go higher. You know, can you talk to us about those commonly used items?
Sure. Now, you know, forget about tequila and Corona, you know, but coming from Europe, you know, we've got a 10% tariff on the UK that affects Scotch. We look at the wines. I just read a report yesterday that there was an importer of wines who's concerned that, you know, the wines from Italy and France could go up 200%. Wow. With this. And, you know, keep in mind that it's not only just the exporter and the importer and the distributor and the retailer, but along the way, when these tariffs hit, everybody's going to add a little bit more to it. So, you know, let's say there's a 10% tariff on Scotch from the UK. Well, that company then is going to pass it on to a distributor or to an exporter, and they might add another 1 or 2%. Then the distributor here might add another 1 or 2%, and the retailer. So before long, that 10% tariff could be 15, 16, 20%.
I'm thinking about the folks that are producing alcohol here, though, perhaps thinking this is a great opportunity. And maybe someone's listening to you now and saying, well, okay, fine, we're just going to buy local. Is that a solution, Phil? Is that a viable solution that we're just going to buy local for these things?
Yes, but keep in mind that, you know, when you get rid of the imports, then there's more of a demand for the products that are here, and it's supply and demand. So if imported Scotch doesn't work for you and you're going to get Kentucky bourbon might see an increase in price because of the demand for it is greater. And to olive oil, keep in mind that most olive oil comes from either Tunisia, Greece, Spain. Last on the list is Italy, matter of fact. Even though a lot of the olive oils have Italian names to them, look on the bottle. All of those countries are affected by these tariffs. And olive oil has gone up in price substantially over the past probably 2-3 years. So now we're going to see it go even more. So in this case, we do have a good supply of olive oil from California. But you've got to look, because some of the brands from California also blend with imported olive oil because it's less expensive.
And once prices go up, how often do they go down, Phil?
No.
They're not going to come down. We've never seen that magic. We always were told that it could happen, but it doesn't really happen, does it?
No, yeah. Let's go back to your example of eggs. You know, eggs were up to like 10 bucks, you know, a dozen, and everybody's saying, oh, well, you know, they'll go back to $2.99. They're not going back.
Well, we were talking about eggs before our conversation because I wanted to ask you about this part of the story, because obviously egg prices are sort of like the new gas price. You start judging or learning or feeling about the economy based on certain items. And so that's an item that I'm watching. And one of the proposals by this new administration is, in order to bring the price of eggs back down, we're going to import eggs and import them from places like Turkey, for example. And I was curious to ask you about that because right now, do we do any of that, Phil? Do we actually, as U.S. consumers, buy eggs from overseas? And what do you think about that proposal? Is that a viable proposal to help us bring down the price of eggs?
Stupidest idea ever. Eggs are perishable, number one. So you can't put them on a boat to bring them from Turkey to here. You've got to fly them in. So you've got that cost of transportation on top of it. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense. What we've got to do is we've got to solve avian flu. That's the issue. If we can solve that, the price will come down. Yes, we do import a small amount of eggs from other countries, but it's more in the specialty stores. It's not going to bring the price down.
Just for balance, we've talked about how this tariff situation can cause many challenges for us at a local grocery store, whether it's price or supply or anything else. But what about the farmers? You mentioned that your family has farming in its background, and there are those that are exporting to countries like China. Is there a recalibration that needs to take place, like this administration is talking about, that could benefit Americans, in your opinion?
Well, two things. One, if you remember during the first Trump administration, when we put the tariff on China, the soybean farmers here in the U.S. had to be bailed out. You know, we grow three things really well: soy, wheat, and corn. None of them are, they're all ingredients, but none of them are staples for our diet. The idea that we can grow all of our own food here is absurd. And just about every product of those 40,000 products that are in a supermarket started in the ground. Even Twinkies, you know, have ingredients that started in the ground. So because of climate change, because of weather problems, because of droughts, because of floods, you know, we've seen a lot of our agriculture move south, whether it's to Mexico, Latin America, Central America, because we can't grow it in Florida, Arizona, or California anymore. So no, it's not realistic. You can't all of a sudden, you know, grow avocados at the flick of a switch. It takes 7 to 8 years for an avocado plant to, you know, yield fruit. There's certain manufacturing that certainly could be brought back here to the U.S., but when it comes to food, not so much. We can't grow coffee. You know, we don't have a hot, humid climate with lots of rain. We can't grow cacao for our chocolates. So we're limited.
Interesting. And we have a big population, which is also what I'm hearing about you. We have a huge population.
And also keep in mind, what we do is we consume about $2.6 trillion worth of food every year here in the U.S. The total imports are only about $200 billion. And, you know, put it in perspective, that's 6% of all the food that we consume. So let's get a reality check. Why do we need to grow apples here or berries here if we're only talking about 6% of what we consume?
Interesting. Very interesting to look at it that way. Phil, you're full of information. You are the guru. I agree with Peter Jennings. He did a good job a while back establishing that name. Okay, final question for you because of your title. Do you have any tips or tricks to share with us, Phil, about how to grocery shop a little bit more efficient? Some practical advice that help us shop smarter, if you will.
Sure. There's two major things. One, always shop with a shopping list, of course. But now when you go to a supermarket, you know, the cash register receipt lists by name everything that you buy. So I call it the ultimate shopping list. So take last week's cash register receipt, because we buy about 75% of the same things week after week. Take inventory in your refrigerator and your cupboard, cross off the items you don't need, and then add the items you do need, and then draw three horizontal lines on the bottom. Those are your impulse items. If you don't have a shopping list, surveys have shown that we spend about 40% more because, oh, chocolate, wine, whatever. So yes. You know, do those three blank lines when you get to the store. When you see an impulse item that you want, write it in. That's number one. Number two, never go into the store the way they want you to. Don't go in through the produce department. It's aromatherapy with all those beautiful colors and aromas. Puts you in a better mood. When you're in a better mood, guess what? What happens is you spend more. Third, and most importantly, especially with the tariffs, and we're looking to save money, don't waste food. 40% of all of our food in this country is wasted. So, you know, if you're going out to dinner, take home leftovers. There's this big thing now in the New York City restaurants, and you know this, that now the chefs are dismayed because people are leaving stuff on their plate. They're ashamed to take home, you know, doggy bags. I'm not. I take home doggy bags.
Me neither.
And also when you're buying at home, use leftovers at home as well. If we can reduce our waste, you know, that 40%, we're going to save money.
I feel like you're sort of peering into my soul, Phil, with the aromatherapy from the produce section and the random chocolate buy. I feel like you know my prototype. I guess I'm not that unique after all.
We're all that way.
Phil, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, and keep up the great work, John.